is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekend news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. Well, we're talking today chicken politics, honest elections, and no man left behind. Those are the stories, my friends. And we have economist Harry Dent will join us. Sidney Powell will be here. Senator Zachary Nunn and Ilana Friedman as well. You know, the big story we're going to start up front here is the game of chicken politics that is happening in Washington, D.C. Now, the reverberations from this and the impact on everybody, it cannot be, overstated here. And I know a lot of people, it gets confusion because there are so many numbers being thrown around and so many deals. But listen, we're going to try to break it down right next with you here and explain to you what's happening. And for that, we have here economist Harry Dent is with me. It's been a while, Harry. And let me tell you about Harry first. He's an economic forecaster, New York Times best-selling author. He's the editor of a free newsletter you can get, which is entitled H.S. Dent Forecast. And that's at harrydent.com. All right. So, Harry, here's what we've got here. Let me explain what I'm seeing right now, and we'll get you to explain to people. I'm hoping to enlighten folks a little bit here. So right now, we've got these two bills that they're trying to connect together. We have a $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. From what I understand, the actual infrastructure on that is, I'm hearing numbers around 10% or so, and the rest of a lot of projects and things, which is typical Washington, a lot of pork in there, a lot of specialty type projects. Then you have this $3.5 trillion, which is a massive spending bill, nothing like we've ever seen the sight of before. On top of this, our debt, of course, right now is approximately $29 trillion. So let's start first with these bills, Harry, and what's taking place. Right now, there's a fight within the Democrat Party. You've got the extreme progressive, extreme left that is fighting with the moderates. And they don't want to approve one bill without the other. Explain to listeners, please, first, what you think about these bills, what kind of is in these bills, and what your opinion is of these for the American people.
In good times, when you're growing, you should be running surpluses. What we're doing is already running deficits when the economy's booming, and I'm predicting the chicken's about to get, ready to come home to roost in the coming years, and you're going to see deficits that are going to really scare people. So this does not make sense. This is just more ways. Everybody's fighting to constantly print more money in the Fed and the politicians, more spending and stuff. We need less spending. The only thing I would do, particularly this time period, the only part of it I like is the part called infrastructure. And like you say, it's not really as much as it sounds. And this is the best time to make long-term investments in infrastructure because we're at the lowest interest rates we've seen historically and we'll see in our lifetime ahead. So that's the only thing. Qualified, solid infrastructure projects, which are going to pay themselves off, makes sense. But our debt is skyrocketing, like you pointed out. I've been saying for years that once we have the next downturn, we're going to come out of it shortly with up to $40 trillion in government debt. It's just insanity. And it does. That's 2x GDP at that rate. At 100% of GDP, studies have proven that it really starts weighing on the economy. So we've already borrowed too much. You shouldn't be running deficits, heavy deficits in good times, because you're going to be forced to run them in downturns. And I'm telling you, I think you can see a couple of $4 trillion deficits a year coming ahead. So to pile this on right now makes no sense. And like you say, it depends on how solid it is. There's not that much probably.
Right. I think about everybody would agree with you. I mean, to invest in actual real infrastructure. But the problem is that $1.2 trillion, a lot of it is social spending bills that now they're calling, Harry, social infrastructure or people infrastructure or something. You know, the one thing, they always have an interesting way of words when they want to package things and sell it to the public. But now keep in mind, let's remind people, Harry, right now, a lot of this, I mean, we're talking a free community college, the expansion to the Medicaid programs. We're talking the universal child care. And then we're talking really parts of this new Green Deal. Now, this is this $3.5 trillion. The problem is there's no way to get this 1.2 approved because Pelosi doesn't have the votes. I mean, surely the Senate would pass it and Manchin and Sinema would jump on the 1.2. Everybody's in line with that. But the far left extreme part of the party and the Democrats will not allow that to happen. So that's kind of dead in the water without this other. How does this end?
Well, I'm just, all I know is I'm hoping it doesn't pass or that it keeps getting delayed, because we can't keep doing this. You don't run huge deficits when the economy is growing, because you have to be prepared to run large ones when the economy goes down. And I think 2022-23 may be the worst years of our lifetime for the economy. So this is the wrong time to be pouring on deficit spending when you're going to have forced deficit spending from falling revenues and rising social expenses like welfare and all that sort of stuff. All that stuff's going to go up the roof if the economy weakens. And by the way, this is the longest expansion in the economy pretty much in history without a recession.
Isn't a lot of this happening right now? The kind of programs we're talking about, Harry, that they're trying to put through right now. And you and I, over the years, have touched on some of this, but isn't this really kind of AKA, I mean, really a socialist agenda? And I'm really talking about the spending bills and the projects that the extreme left of that party is trying to, really, they're trying to hijack the entire system. And that's that game of chicken that's being played out there yet. You know, they've given the power to just a select few. Pelosi looks like she's lost control of the party a bit. The question is, do they compromise in the back door and, you know, the back room alleys there and then come forth with something else crazy that they put out to the American people? Or does this thing really die on the vine? I think is what a lot of people have wondered. But isn't this sort of a version of sort of what we've talked about over the years? I mean, come on, seriously, socialism coming to America, isn't this kind of an appetizer for that?
Well, I mean, this has happened ever since, I'd say, the 60s. I mean, the problem, what I approve of one thing. When there's a shock to the economy or recession, there ought to be short term, and I mean literally short term, kind of help for people to get unemployed and that sort of thing. That's it. All we've been doing is adding more and more benefits, more and more social expenditures to help people. So it gets to the point where a lot of people don't have to work. And you notice here, even after COVID, a lot of people left, they're not coming back. People have gotten so used to enough support that they don't even want to come back when they do get laid off, or people get laid off and say, well, you know, if I can collect all these different benefits. So it's not a good thing. It's good to help people through a short period. It should only be short term. You shouldn't be able to be on unemployment and all these sort of assistance programs forever, unless you're really, you know, afflicted with something. Mm-hmm. And even then, I mean, it shouldn't be this generous. So, I mean, we're showing signs again, just COVID. COVID threw a lot of people out of work. And you know what? A lot of people just aren't even coming back once they get up because they assume they're going to get all this type of support. So we've already gone too far. And now this is going way too far.
Did you see this coming? I mean, I'm talking about right now with the political structure of the environment up there with the hijacking of the party, Biden being in the White House now. Isn't this the worst kind of deal?
Well, you expect more when the Democrats get in power, but I wouldn't have seen this much. I mean, you know, with all the stimulus they've done, I mean, I just they printed more money. And then when you add the fiscal stimulus in the last year and a half, more than all the stimulus since the 2008-9 recession that we never really came out of. That's why we've been living on stimulus. Mm-hmm. And in my research shows we should have expected that, because the baby boom had peaked in their spending and we were going to have a slower economy into about the next couple of years, 2022-23. It doesn't make sense to be, like I say, my big gripe here, you should be conserving your powder as government because you're going to have to deal with recessions. I'm just hoping that the economy turns down fast enough that people start to say, oh my God, no, we need to save this money to bail out unemployed people rather than to pile on all these loans.
Yeah, they're not conserving anything right now. I mean, they're really bankrupting the country. Yeah. And you know, this isn't just a talking point anymore. We're getting into the danger zone, I think. And I'm scared as hell right now, Harry, but I fear for the future and for our country. I sincerely do. Let me get your opinion on this here, Nick. This was a big headline. I've been seeing a lot of these stories that are predicting. I don't know what you're thinking, but even in the next few months, not even next year. For instance, this one, which you know, Robert Kiyosaki there, I seen one headline from him just the other day. He expect the world's biggest crash in October. He's predicting this month. There are other reports like that as well. And I've seen three or four or five of them, people that are predicting right now this thing is going to hit like right here at the end of 2021. And they're saying the growing debt, like you, unsustainable, and they're predicting a crash to happen right now. And they're talking about, you know, Bitcoin, gold, silver, and things that there'll be new opportunities, as there always is after a crash, of course. What do you think right now? How close are we to the danger point right this moment?
Well, no, I think it's either beginning or going to begin by the end of the year. I see a crash likely coming into year, a first crash. Now, one of the things I've studied in depth, since I've been warning that this is the biggest bubble in history, we're only ballooning it more. But what people don't understand, they say, well, I'll just go with it and then I'll get out when it looks dangerous. No, bubbles crash 40 to 50% in the first few months. When they finally go, like the 2000 crash and the 1929 crash, and I've studied every bubble crash in the last century and a half, the markets are down 40 to 50% before you know it. Then people panic. Then the market bounces about halfway back. Then they say, oh my gosh, get back in. And then it crashes for another couple of years. So we are in that sort of thing. Robert Kiyosaki and I have been touring in Australia and doing programs in the U.S. together a lot of times, because the difference between he and I see the safe haven when this happens. I mean, this is just a bubble. And the bubble started to burst, you know, in 2000, and then things went up to 2007. That was a natural boom. Baby boomers were still spending full force. After 2008, the economy died. And that's why somebody's always got to ask the question, how come the government has had to have nonstop escalating stimulus for 14 years? That tells you the economy underneath is dead. We would be better to shake out the economy instead of adding exponentially more debt. We should have written off half the bad debts, so we would be a lot leaner and meaner to deal with this, especially when we come out the other side. So we've had bad policy for years, and this is just the crescendo. We need a reset to get the economy out of this bubble, out of this endless debt accumulation, so we can get solid and grow again. And the problem is the economy is going to do it for us. The economy is going to crash, and then a lot of this debt's going to fail. And then people are going to see, well, the last thing we need is more debt. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to have to do it the hard. We're doing it the hard way because governments decided after 2008, we just can't have a recession again. Mm. Recessions keep you healthy. Okay, recessions weed out the inefficient companies, weed out the unproductive debts.
Let's talk about inflation a moment here. Okay, so prices rose across the board in August and through September by a lot, says Forbes. Overall prices in August jumped 5.3% year over year. And so right now, people can feel it. They can feel it in a lot of areas, Harry. They can feel it at the grocery store. They feel it with all kinds of consumer items they're buying, gasoline, of course, all of that. In the meantime, the feds are messing with our energy. That's becoming a real problem. And so on top of all this, the one thing I wanted to, and everything you just said, the big factor here to me is confidence. There's a lack of confidence, and I feel like it is eroding. The confidence is eroding out there. People are uncertain. And everything you just laid out is going to impact our political field. And really, the Biden administration is in here. They're going to take the hit for all of this, because it doesn't sound like we're going to escape what's going to happen next in these next couple of years. What can people do as far as the inflation goes? Talk to us about that, please.
This is the inflation of the 70s, was not caused by government deficit spending, although they did that. Mm-hmm. The main cause was the massive baby boom in their young years, costing the whole economy money until they entered and became productive in the 80s. Okay. This is a temporary inflation, and it is solely, inflation should be at the lowest levels, literally close to zero right now, by natural factors, mm-hmm. which I measure and project very well. This inflation is solely because of the excessive stimulus, and this is what catches the government. Yeah. They stimulate so much that inflation starts to get high enough, and then they can't stimulate as much without threatening inflation to go up. And then if they don't stimulate and pull the cork, it's like somebody stopping drinking and all of a sudden they're puking and shaking every day because you're detoxing. So this is when I talk about debt being restructured and debt being written down, that's like a big detox for the economy. Debt, like I said earlier, is taking more and more debt to have less and less effect, to where the debt just becomes such a burden that at some point the economy will fail just because of the debt burden. So we need to flush out this debt. Mm-hmm. It's going to be painful. There's no easy way to do it.
With what's going to happen now these next couple of years, and with that reckless spending we've been talking about, the unsustainability of the national debt, which you and I have been talking about for many, many, many years, but now it's at a crescendo moment here. Do we learn lessons as a nation? We have an opportunity to learn from this, and I hear everything you're saying as we get over this hurdle here. Do we learn anything as a nation?
We do. You know, we have not seen a bubble era like this since the Roaring Twenties, and it really was from about World War One and into the Roaring Twenties, mm-hmm. and the Great Depression. People remembered that for a long time. They don't remember it now. None of us were alive. That was the greatest downturn. Can you imagine? We've seen maybe 11% unemployment at the worst, and people are screaming. 25% unemployment. Stocks didn't go down 50 or 60%. They went down 89%. Investors got crucified. So people do learn lessons, but mainly the big lesson you learn, because it takes debt. It's debt that's behind. When debt is growing much faster in the economy, then financial assets get a lot of that excess, and financial assets gets bubbly, and both of them are causing unproductive investment. I've got a thing called money velocity. I can measure it. That's what I quoted earlier. We've gone from a 0.8 reading, which is about as good as it gets, to a 0.3, the lowest in history. Lowest, as low as the Great Depression, okay? That's how unproductively we're investing money. So we learn when this crashes, oh my gosh, you can't just live on borrowing forever. So mm-hmm. borrowing goes out of phase. A lot of debts that should have been written off in the past are written off suddenly because people realize, like in a Chapter 11 or Chapter 7 bankruptcy and businesses, you just renegotiate with your creditor because you realize, no, we're bankrupt. We're going to realize we are bankrupt as a nation and economy, and we got to write down debts, and we got to stop borrowing money to stimulate our economy. And the worst thing they've been doing, Malcolm, is not just borrowing it at exponentially higher rates. They've been injecting mm-hmm. trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars into the financial markets to hype them up, to make people feel temporarily more wealthy. And that affects the upper end of the economy more than the everyday person. And that's what sets up these bubbles. I'm telling you, I estimate we're going to see globally, we have $550 trillion in financial assets globally. Mm-hmm. I'm estimating $250 trillion, Malcolm, is going to disappear in the next 2 to 3 years in the economy. Wow. People are going to feel that. Wow. And borrowing is going to be out. Speculating is going to be out. We will learn lessons after. I'm warning my subscribers, you better get out of these financial assets and protect yourself now, because you're not going to have anything left to invest in.
Let me tell you again, HarryDent.com, HS Dent Forecast is that newsletter. It is a moment in our nation. I just have a gut feeling about this, that it could absolutely reshape our political structure in this country for decades to come. A big thank you here to Harry Dent. Up next, friends, we're going to take a look at our elections and what's happening with all of that. Sidney Powell will be on with us, and this is going to be a deep dive into some of this. Looking forward to this next segment. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
You know, Healthy Cell is a terrific lineup of products. They have products that are pill-free, gel-pack vitamins. Looking for better sleep, focus, and energy? Check out Healthy Cell, the leading innovator in nutritional supplements for cell health. Healthy Cell has a product that helps REM sleep, helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep Supplement. The only sleep supplement that's designed to support all stages of sleep. And boy, is it needed now during all the stress of the COVID-19 pandemic. So go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any product from Healthy Cell. I use them every day. I believe in them, and you should too. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Viewpoint this Sunday, my friends. And well, listen, you know, one of the things we heard a lot about is fair and free elections. I've heard that so many times. If we don't get our election systems straight, the rest of the problems are dwarfed in comparison. And that's where we're going to start and dive into right next here. We'll do that with Sidney Powell, joins us on the program here. Sidney is an attorney, a former federal prosecutor. Of course, she was the lead counsel to General Michael Flynn. And, you know, Sidney was one of those voices at the center of the storm for Americans in the election 2020. She's also the author of the bestseller Licensed to Lie, by the way. And you can get that at any bookstore in the America Out Loud bookstore as well. Sidney, welcome to Viewpoint this Sunday. It's great to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's always nice to be with you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So listen, the headline that got my attention that I seen just about a week or so ago was Sidney Powell countersues Dominion for bad PR and fraud. I took a double take and I started reading. Of course, Dominion, they've threatened and sued a lot of people. Lou Dobbs, Newsmax, OAN, Fox News, Rudy Giuliani, Mike Lindell, and countless others. They've sued everything. And so you kind of struck back. And at the center of this, I seen your claims were that they wanted to punish you for speaking out. They wanted to smear your reputation, impair your credibility, deflect public attention from the truth of the fraud in the election, and punish you for drawing attention to the vulnerabilities in Dominion's machines and software. Let's start there a moment on this. That was a big deal. You're not hearing a lot anymore about Dominion. What's at the center of this lawsuit? And you really felt it was time to hit them back.
Well, it's a wrong that's called abuse of process. It's a recognized tort in our legal system because that's exactly what they did. I mean, the law is supposed to be a means by which people redress their grievances in a civil, impartial forum. But what Dominion has done in response to being caught essentially in its election fraud is attack and use what's called lawfare to try to intimidate people and shut down any conversation about what was really happening in this election. And they sued me for defamation, among other things. And a defense to defamation is proving the truth, the fact that everything I said was true. So they've forced me into a position where I have to, well, technically they're supposed to prove it's false, but you know, the way the world works, it essentially falls on me to prove it's true, although that's not the way the law is really supposed to work. And digging and gotten even more information, and they sent over 150 cease and desist letters to people, including my clients who were represented by me. I mean, that's an ethical violation to send them letters. They should have sent them to me on their behalf or our lawyers on their behalf. And they've just tried to intimidate everybody under the sun and staged it in such a way that you knew if you said anything else, you know, you were going to be slammed with a $1.3 billion lawsuit. And they knew they didn't have damages anywhere near that. They did that to sensationalize everything and get headlines and scare people.
You know, but Sydney, they didn't back down. You used the right word, intimidation. They use that across the board with a lot of people, it appears to be. I would imagine there have been quite a few countersuits on this thing. Have there been?
No. Ours is the only countersuit, although Mike Lindell did file separate lawsuits. We filed a counterclaim in the same suit. He filed some separate lawsuits in Minnesota.
What's the time factor on this, and when will we know more?
Well, the judge has just entered an order to tell us to all get together and figure out what the schedule will be or should be, and then he will enter a scheduling order. Yeah. So discovery should start sometime soon, and that's what we're really looking forward to, as an opportunity to get information from Dominion that they'll be required to produce by the court, because we're entitled to both defend the claims they brought against me and pursue the claims of abusive process that we brought against them.
Well, this is also an expensive proposition, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons they filed a $1.3 billion lawsuit, to drain my energy and time and money and everything else. It's horrible.
Some of your correspondence and newsletters you've been sending out to Americans all across our country really got my attention here this past week, Sydney. And let's dive into that right next here. One of the points I see you have here is America's elections have been rigged for two decades. What amazes me as I read through a lot of your correspondence to Americans is you haven't backed off of this at all. In fact, it looks to me like you are really doubling down on the truth. You've kind of committed your life to this at this point, haven't you?
Yes. Well, essentially, Dominion has forced me to do that. I mean, I said when they sued me to begin with, it was not a good move on their part. I don't understand why they would do that, because it puts me in a position where I have to pursue this. I can't back off. I can't, you know, just say, oh, yeah, I'll write you a check for $1.3 billion. I mean, we'd watch that bounce from to infinity and beyond. and I have to defend, you know, they put me in a position where I have to work harder to defend my reputation. If they'd all left me alone, this might have gone away, but they've brought it to the forefront. And yes, all I've ever wanted is the truth, Malcolm, so we could fix whatever's wrong. But we're supposed to have a government for and by the people. Mm-hmm. And it's been stolen from us.
There are three interesting questions you put in there that I want to share with listeners right now. The first was, why has it been so difficult to get people in power to see the fraud in the most recent and prior elections? I know a lot of people would love an answer to that one. Why do they issue blanket denials of no evidence when there are mountains of it? I've wondered that myself personally, Sydney. And then why do they turn a blind eye? And then you say the answers to those questions are now obvious. They all know. This is really what it really got interesting to me. And you say they've known for 21 years. Let's talk about that a moment, please. I really want to use this moment. You've done a lot of research and a lot of digging on this thing. What's going on with our election systems here in America?
Well, unfortunately, somebody figured out how to devise an algorithm and inject it into computerized voting machines to change the result without it being detected at least 20 years ago. And we found video of a very brave man who stood in front of a congressional hearing that included Jerry Nadler and Maxine Waters. I think it was the House Judiciary Committee, on a field trip to Ohio. Back in 2004, and told them that he had been hired to write the algorithm, and he had done it, and that the purpose was to rig an election. And a patriot pointed that out to us. I mean, people are starting to send us information from all across the country. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this has been going on for 21 years. Ever since there have been computers, it has gotten increasingly worse. So the horrifying thing is, we don't know now what, if any, person in office was actually duly elected. And we must go back to paper ballots And we really need an entirely new national election for every single office based on paper ballots and real voter ID with citizens only voting. That's going to be the only way we can know that we have a vote of and by the people, and do it precinct by precinct with observers counting and in a way that's it's completely transparent. I mean, that's what the rule of law depends on in this country, that we have free and fair elections, and we clearly haven't had them.
It kind of going back to a simpler day when all we were worried about was a hanging chad, maybe, Sydney?
Yeah, well, we learned from a video of people that worked on that election that they actually, somebody fraudulently put in the wrong paper to create that problem. But yeah, we got to have paper ballots that are hand marked and bipartisan group counting them precinct by precinct and old fashioned reporting and keeping the actual ballots. That's what it's going to take, I think, to get us back on track.
Yeah,
there's an awful lot of power and an awful lot of money. We're talking trillions and trillions of dollars of global wealth and communist China all over this. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very wrong and very frightening.
All right. How could we ever get to that point that you just say, when the entire system, the entire establishment, the system is against what you're suggesting? They are part of the corruption, obviously. So how would we ever get there? Can we?
I don't know, Malcolm. I really don't know. I know we've got to try, because that's what this country's built on, and that's what we're supposed to be. We've got to keep trying. Getting the truth out is the first thing, so the American people know what's been going on. And there's a huge obstacle to that now in from every side. And it's the COVID and the vaccine and all of that stuff is all wrapped up in this. It's about control and domination and destruction of the middle class of the United States of America, because if they can take out the middle class, and they're going about it in every way they can, then they've destroyed the American dream and reduced us to dependency on the government, which is where they want everybody.
Mm. Sydney, you say here in your communications, countless politicians with the power of incumbency have known for years that votes are manipulated by corrupt powers instead of the will of the voters. So when you say they play the game or they are out, why hasn't it come out before now, really? The 2020 election was the crescendo moment where it just was so blatant, I guess. But why was it such a secret to before that? Why didn't a lot of that leak out over the years? Any idea?
No, other than the, I don't know what to call it, whether it's fear or intimidation. I mean, one of the Diebold whistleblowers said there was a culture of fear inside Diebold at the time, and that all the upper echelon of the company and high-level government officials knew about it. People have been afraid to say anything. There's a tendency, apparently, to go along to get along, or there's some interesting and very troubling stories of suspicious deaths along the way also. In fact, if people would watch the documentary that we found that's at defendingtherepublic.org and therepublic.org on Rumble, it's a documentary done with the man who spoke out back in 2004 about having written the algorithm himself. And the investigator on that was looking into that at his behest wound up dead by, quote, suicide in a seedy motel with all kinds of suspicious circumstances around it. And the man who had talked to him had written the algorithm did not believe it was suicide at all.
Since the 2020 election and everything that had transpired and Donald Trump, how much, right at this moment, does Donald Trump know about the kind of corruption that you're speaking about? How much does he know about this?
I think he knows. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I don't have any basis for that. But I remember him saying back in 2016 that it's all rigged. In 2016 that it was all rigged. And I think, you know, they just didn't have the backup plan in 2016. I think 2016 was rigged for Hillary to win, but Trump voters turned out in such numbers on the day of the election that the algorithm, they didn't have the backup plan of the mail-in ballots to create the fraud that helped them get by this time.
Right now, we're just shy of the midterm coming up in 2022 and then the general election in 2024. I want to ask you something. There's only one president in America's history that has returned to power after losing a re-election incumbency, and that was the 22nd and 24th president, which was the same president. And that's, speaking of Grover Cleveland, is the only one in our history to do that. Does history repeat itself again with Donald Trump in 2024?
Not unless we get paper ballots and real voter ID, it won't.
You're confident. I hear this from different people. You're pretty certain that this next election of the one, I mean, and I've heard that repeatedly, that these elections, they're so corrupt that they'll never be right again unless we fix the system. So you're, even with everything being out in the light of day, you still believe they can steal the election?
Oh, yes. No doubt about it.
So the only way to fight back is to go and do what you say, but there's no way that's going to happen in turn before 2022 and certainly 2024. So in which case, you're surely, and I'm hearing this from others, you are not predicting a victorious couple of elections coming up.
Well, they might give us the illusion of that. I mean, they might, you know, give us the illusion of more people being elected on the Republican ticket or whatever. Yeah. There's only one party. There's the political party, and then there's the American people.
Mm. Yeah, we call that the Uniparty, right?
Right.
Yeah, it is true. It's the Republicans, Democrats. It's the establishment. It's the system is what you're speaking about, which I've been railing against for many, many years, Sidney. I get it. I get it. And there's corrupt in both parties. You're exactly right. It's a living, breathing machine in Washington that feeds onto itself here. Basically, now, you mentioned China a moment ago. What should people know about China's influence in these elections?
I think it's enormous. We need to look. And I haven't done this research yet, but we need to look at how much China has infiltrated every aspect of America from the terms of the important real estate it's bought, the companies it has bought here. Like, I remember a number of years ago, China bought Smithfield Hams,
mm-hmm, right.
Smithfield Foods. Well, I used to get a Smithfield ham every Christmas. It was part of our longstanding family Christmas tradition. They're not the same. Bought, you know, much of our meat packing industry. So they're into our food industry. They bought the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, which means that no president can stay there anymore like they used to, because China, you know, bugs everything. And they own the Sears Tower, among a few things. They've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in our universities and are stealing research right and left. Again, watch the documentary at defendingtherepublic.org back from 2000, when this man talks about the Chinese influence there also in terms of getting secrets from NASA. And the person that he outed was only fined $100. Think of Dianne Feinstein's Chinese spy who worked with her for 20 years while she was in the Senate Intel Committee, drove her everywhere she went, and while her husband was doing business with China. And nothing happened to him. He was allowed to retire in this country. It's insane what's been going on.
Yeah. You know, if you take what you just say right there and you compile that on top of the current events, Sidney, of what just happened in Afghanistan, what took place with leaving Bagram, air base there, which surely the Chinese are going to confiscate. The deal that they're making with the Taliban for the rare earths and all of that, which, again, their position, our energy system. It seems like all of the policies being put forth right now are not in Americans' best interest. So a lot of that plays to the narrative, in my opinion, of who is Joe Biden and what sort of influence does China have over him? When you try to make
They own Joe Biden. They own the entire Biden family. I mean, Hunter's laptop makes that more than clear. There's more than enough blackmail and information on the Biden family to, gosh, I mean, it's mind-blowing.
So how does this happen then? How does it happen? I mean, we're sitting here talking about stuff that is so unbelievable, and yet it happens like a normal course of business or politics, and nobody says a damn thing.
Yeah, well, it's been allowed to happen since at least 2000 that we can identify. And it's just gotten more and more. The longer it's gone unchecked, the bigger and worse it's gotten. And now it's exponentially bad.
So when you look right now, Sydney, at the current events that are happening all around, the decisions that the Biden administration are making, the debt that they're trying to run up with the spending bills, I just had a conversation with the world economist at the top of the program about that. When you look at all of this and you see the decisions and the debacle that Afghanistan was, you have to come to some sort of a conclusion. Whose best interest is this in? I mean, it certainly isn't any American. So you have to believe that somebody's calling the shots here. Do you think Joe Biden is calling the shots of the presidency?
Oh, Lord, no. Joe Biden can't tie his shoes without help.
So who's doing it?
I knew the answer to that. Obama has substantial influence. There are Soros entities behind everything we're seeing. In fact, Soros's Tides Foundation was in the same building with Dominion in Canada. I think they all moved sometime recently. People from Smartmatic, which is another, related mm-hmm. company that's been in the election business off and on. Well, actually, yeah, for 20 years or so. Are on the board of the Election Assistance Commission here in this country. And also Lord Malik Brown, Soros's right-hand man, has had a role in that. So it's just incestuous and evil, and it's everywhere.
What can people do at this? Well, how do we take it back?
We've got to demand from our county commissioners. We've got to go local, totally local, precinct by precinct, I think, and demand the paper ballots and real voter ID and just make our voices heard civilly and legitimately and let the powers that be know we cannot. We don't want to be a communist country.
Do you ever look, I mean, I want to ask you sincerely, do you ever look at the kind of work you're doing as courageous?
No, I was just made this way. God didn't give me a spirit of fear. And I've never been able to just stand by and watch something wrong happen or somebody be hurt and not try to stop it. I cannot turn a blind eye to injustice or abuse or anything wrong. Problems don't get solved that way. They get worse.
Remarkable. Sydney, thank you for speaking out. And let me tell listeners now, your website again is
defendingtherepublic.org. We're a nonprofit C4 organization. Donations are not tax deductible, but we are a nonprofit and we are doing everything we can do to defend America values and the Constitution with the few dedicated lawyers we have. And we need more. We need more volunteers. We need more people willing to step up and stand in the breach. It's very important, very important work.
The one thing you can say about Sidney Powell is she is one courageous woman. Up next here, Senator Zachary Nunn, Alana Friedman, stranded in Afghanistan. What about this no man left behind? We'll continue on with Viewpoint in just a moment. AmericaOutloud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
liberty, and justice for all.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Listen, one of the biggest debacles probably in America's history and certainly with our military is what's just taken place in Afghanistan. We've been talking to you about this, but one of the questions we ponder is what's happened to America's principal point of, you know, no man left behind. That was always something we stood on, and metaphorically, but principally, it was an American principle. And yet, we see what's happened in Afghanistan, not only to Americans, but to people that we promised a commitment with in Afghan as well. All of this is a stain on the country. And a lot of people are questioning why. Why? You know, what really happened here? Let's pick that up next, my friends. Here, I'd like you to meet here. Iowa State Senator Zach Nunn joins us. Now, Zach has got a very interesting background. He is a lieutenant colonel with the United States Air Force. He himself served 3 combat tours overseas with 700 air combat hours. Wow. And also interesting, I'll tell you a little bit more about that after. He is in another big election coming up in 2022, running for the U.S. House. So that could be a game changer as well. Now, also joining us is Ilana Friedman. And Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst here at America Out Loud. We're happy and delighted to have both of you here. Ilana, you have I want to start with you a quick moment here. You have an op-ed up on AmericaOutLoud.com. Biden's lost words, leave no man behind. People are questioning how many Americans are left behind there, really. And you say in the piece here that, you're saying this withdrawal resulted in abandonment of more than 15,000 American citizens and many thousand more Afghans. Any idea how many are left behind there? Do we have any clue of that, Ilana?
The government refuses to give us any numbers larger than a few hundred. But the information that I had from my intelligence sources indicated that before this all started, there were more than 17,000 Americans thought to be living or working in Afghanistan before this takedown happened. And then when the Biden administration began to suddenly pull out, the first that we knew about it was when they pulled out in the middle of the night in Bagram Air Force Base. And then later on, they just completely abandoned the people who were there. And they didn't seem to have any idea how many people, how many Americans were in Afghanistan at the time. But the intelligence numbers that I have received were in the neighborhood of 17,000 people.
Incredible. Incredible. And I've always wondered what those numbers are, because I knew we never really got the truth for that. Senator Nunn, great to meet you and have you on the program here. And I want to ask you here now, what I find interesting about some of the backstory I read here about you is even before the disaster that happened there in Kabul there at the airport, you had already kind of, I think, or you correct me on this, but I think you had already kind of got yourself into a mission here. And there are news reports that your plans started there when you went out and got other military colleagues and reached out to people to try to get an aircraft into Uzbekistan, I understand. And this is as that was all happening at the airport. So this was before we really even knew the end result. Is that when that started and when that happened? And what really got going here? Because you've been at the head of this, trying to get people out of Afghanistan still to this day, correct?
Malcolm, first of all, thank you very much for paying attention to this very critical issue in U.S. national security, not just for the U.S. domestically, but for our allies and our American citizens abroad. You're absolutely right. Once we started to see the collapse, the rapid collapse of Afghanistan in areas that had not been traditional Taliban strongholds, we started to get concerned. It began with a interpreter who had served with us and his desperate plea to be able to save himself, his family, folks who were in the area. And so what we looked at was private charters to get people out from neighboring countries. Within a week, we were in a situation where HKIA, the airport in Kabul, was not only under siege, but was in dire straits of being completely overrun by Taliban forces. And Afghans looking to be able to flee because they were promised by the U.S. government that they would be protected if they had a U.S. passport, a U.S. visa, or they had been working for the U.S. government. The challenge here is that as things began to fall, there was a president saying this will not be another Saigon. Literally, as individuals are more afraid of hanging to the landing gear of a C-17 as it takes off out of Kabul airport than they are to go back to their communities where Afghan soldiers, families, people working with the U.S. are being lined up and executed. So we move very quickly to say, what can we do to help exfil these individuals? And then say, we got a charter aircraft off the ground inside Afghanistan on the 30th of August. So as the last U.S. aircraft flies out and the administration is saying we have left and the U.S. is now pulling out, we were still loading aircraft on the tarmac with civilians and American citizens, getting them out as the U.S. departed. And since that time, I will say we have gotten 4 more aircraft off the ground inside what is truly a conflict zone of internal Afghanistan while American citizens are there.
Yeah, what's unique about your position, Senator, is that you have that military background, and now as a political leader, you're in a unique position, I think. And we're seeing more and more, actually, military leaders come back, and which is a beautiful thing, actually. And they're serving again by running for political office. And I love the way I see that happening. A lot of patriots and conservatives from military are really getting into political office, and it couldn't be a better situation to see that. Right now, tell me what's going on. Let's talk about right now, current day. What's happening with trying to get people out still? Is this still ongoing? What's developing? What kind of success are we having? And what kind of difficulties are still in play?
Great question. And you hit on a lot of topics here. Malcolm, first off, we still have American citizens, as was highlighted, trapped inside the country. On our last flight, we were able to get several dozen families out and the American citizens, as well as an aircraft full of individuals who had directly supported U.S. security for the past 2 decades. These are individuals who not only put themselves on the line to get out of Kabul over the course of last month, but spent the last 2 decades putting their family themselves at risk to be able to help our military members on the ground survive. So our next flight up, we have 2 more flights that we are looking at. We are moving them to a third party country. This country provides a additional security screening. We do a screening before they get on the chartered aircraft that we have volunteers who have paid for. Many of them are Christian groups. They are groups out of political elements, but I would say it's across the board. They're both Democrats and Republican groups who have thrown money forward to help save individuals, from special operations forces to American citizens to most recently the Afghan girls soccer team who made it to Portugal successfully. These things would not happen without a small cadre of volunteers who are working day jobs, raising families, and then waking up Afghan time at 10 o'clock at night to be able to help out these individuals evacuate. And so while this is excellent and we've been able to raise money and we are looking at a sustained air bridge that is literally life-saving to thousands of individuals evacuating, where we have a huge gap here is, where is the U.S. government's rescue plan? And that's a concerning issue for a lot of us. We have met with resistance on getting flight landing permissions. We can get out of Afghanistan, but then we're told there's nowhere for you to land. We can get to a situation where we can identify all the people who are about to be on our manifest with valid passports, but then we have a situation where no one is willing to cross-check these individuals to make sure they're not on a terrorist list or a no-fly list because we're not an official government entity. And then I think most frustratingly, we are not provided with the critical support to be successful to get these individuals sustained when they get to a third country. So we've been paying out of pocket for individuals for over a month who were promised rescue by the U.S. government. We get them to a third-party country, and then they're treated as persona non grata. American citizens who can't get back into their own country, while at the same time here domestically, illegal aliens are allowed to come in nearly unchecked. It is a crazy world we're facing right now.
Yeah, none of it adds up, Senator. I mean, the fact that the problem was created by the United States government and the fact that the government is prohibiting, as you say, and as I reported on just a couple of weeks ago, they're prohibiting any landings in military bases and to give safe haven to these people. All of this stretches the imagination that we're actually talking about this. We've never seen anything like it, actually. You've never seen anything like this in your lifetime.
Never. Yeah. And I think we all collectively hope that we never would.
The military equipment that, again, this is beyond anything we could even put into context here, that was left to arm the Taliban now. They've got world-class equipment. You know, what's the latest there, Alana? Anything you've heard with them? I mean, we're talking sums of equipment here that is unbelievable here. What are we hearing about that?
Well, the amount of money that we're talking about in terms of the value of this equipment has been estimated at about $18 billion. I'd suggest it's probably worth a lot more, because when you turn over these kinds of equipment, some of them very high tech, some of them strategically extraordinarily valuable, and you turn them over to the enemy, we have become a terror supporting nation.
When I first heard this story, actually, I didn't actually believe it was true. I could not imagine that a United States president, I just couldn't grab my arms around this, Senator, that this would happen, that we would have left any kind of equipment like that. Again, it's like we left in the middle of the night. There was no strategic plan whatsoever. What do you make of this? What, in your opinion, what will be the price we pay for this equipment we've left?
So the canary in the coal mine for me was when the United States decided to pack up Bagram Air Force Base, the largest air base in all of Central Asia, and drop the keys off with the Afghani commander and said, over to you. That is no transition plan. That is no protection plan. And not only did we leave it behind, but we left the Afghanis, who are already in a difficult situation, ever more perilous for two reasons. One, they had no ability to utilize that equipment with such short notice. Mm-hmm. And two, we gave up the airfield that provided overwatch for most of the country. And so if we needed those tactical level strikes, when Afghan special forces were the front line of defending first the country and the last line defending HKIA, and they called in for overwatch, they had next to nothing. And now we have an over the horizon capability that is a very small response to a high threat, very tactical level situation. We have nothing to respond to a large strategic threat. The other aspect I would say is, by leaving this behind, as Alana highlighted, not only am I worried about elements like the Taliban getting a hold of this equipment, but of extremist elements like the Haqqani network or ISIS-K, or even more so, fostered states like Pakistan or Iran or Russia and China getting in here, buying this equipment or acquiring this equipment that may have cost the U.S., as was noted, $18 billion, but to them is a treasure trove of advanced weaponry that they can now incorporate into their own knowledge.
We are going to have a bigger conversation on this. I want to invite you back to the Voice of a Nation on Monday here on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. As you know, on my daily program, you can catch that at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or the Encore at 10 p.m. And on that program, we'll take this further and we'll talk to Senator Zach Nunn and Alana Friedman just a bit more about all of this Afghanistan. A lot of questions still to answer as well about this. So join me there for a further conversation. My friends, what an amazing program today. Tremendous thank you to economist Harry Dent up top of the program, Sydney Powell for all of her contributions, and wow, what a courageous woman she is with the work she's doing here. Senator Zachary Nunn, Alana Friedman. It's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. We invite you there as well. And as always, I thank you out there for being with me on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud. Thank you.